You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
Our government cares about
they
you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I'm your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. I know it's Wednesday, you got to get over the hump, and I know you will. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it, but of course, if it is not, you'll get it done anyway. And you'll do it safely, and we appreciate that. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m., 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays from 6 to 8, from 6 p.m. to 8, all times are going to give our Eastern times. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Itaki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. Tuesday, from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, tomorrow night, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening. That's right, time for an awakening on Friday at 8 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, from 4 to 6 on Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturday, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need. From American African owned business, from WeBuyBlack.com. It's the largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses. It's WeBuyBlack.com. So get everything you need from them. Just go to WeBuyBlack.com. Also, too, dear brothers and sisters, the products are produced by us, and they're constantly adding more products. And, of course, they are seeking donations to build a American African supermarket here in the Atlanta area. And then build more American African supermarkets in areas where a lot of American Africans are. See, I tell you. Africa for the Africans, Brother Mamani Tahimba, he's set to go, leaving on Friday, going to Senegal and Gambia, to Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through April 12th. And then in May 24th to June 5th, going to Ghana, and then November 18th to November 29th, going to Tanzania, and then December 24th to January 5th, once again going to Ghana. And you too, brothers and sisters, can go on a trip of a lifetime. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Bubba Rinoco, he has a trip upcoming. He's going to Kemet later on, but he also has one coming up recent, and that is going to be July 18th through August 3rd, 2021, with Professor Smalls, Dr. Lynn Jeffries, and Brother Rinoco, Bubba Rinoco, July 18th through August 3rd. And he also has I think he's going to blend this trip because he also has a trip to Kemet, July 31st to August 13th. So he'll stay in that area. He's done this before. He'll stay in that area and he'll pick up that trip. So there's two outstanding trips, one to Ghana and the other to Kemet. And I think each of them around about 47. Brother Bomani Tahimba, his trip is 37. So, but call them up, go online, check it out for yourself. That's right. Habesha Incorporated. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The mission is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Some of the programs that Habesha is involved in, of course, Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and Green Jobs, Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, the Kashi Project that is going on in Ghana that is happening as we speak. They're building a village, a sustainable village in Ghana. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Those brothers and sisters are doing the work, and they definitely deserve to be supported. The LEDGE Program, Land for Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE Program also, too, they have a raffle. So go to theledgegroup.com. Theledgegroup.com. They have a raffle, a safari in Tanzania. Tanzanian safari. So go check that out, how much that's going to cost and tickets and so forth. It's worth, I think, $15,000. Yeah, serious. But of course, you know, the LEDGE Group deals in the four areas that are vital to human beings and human development. That is food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects going on the continent in six countries, with 170 people employed, with over 260. TheLEDGEGroup.com. The LEDGE Group. So let me see what we got here. Where else we at? What happened? I must have hit something, y'all. I lost BB Atumi. That's right. And I lost a whole bunch of other stuff. I got to get all this stuff back. What happened here? Okay, there it is. Okay, I'm getting rid of this one. And that's where I'm back to. There you go. Okay. BB Atumi. ABIBITUMI. BBAtumi.com. Go to BB Atumi. This Saturday, there's Saturday seminar series. This Saturday, the 3rd of April, at 9 a.m. 9 a.m. Eastern. 8 Central, 7 Mountain, or 6 Pacific AM. You got the Saturday seminar series with Brother Obadale Kamban. This Saturday's The Forces Arrayed Against Africa, Social and Cultural Warfare. The forces that are aligned against Africa, the social and cultural warfare. It's going to be a dynamic presentation this Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern. Go to BB It To Me, brothers and sisters. Make it a favorite. ABIBITUMI.com. Okay. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, located on Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. From 1 p.m. to 7 p.m., the Shrine is open. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, delicious smoothies, health drinks, food. On the weekends, they, on Friday, I think it's Saturday and Sunday, excuse me. Saturday and Sunday, they have vegan food, vegan dishes. So go check it out. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar. The Medu Nature, not the Medu Nature, but the Medu Bookstore. See, Medu means writing. Nature means gods. The writing of the gods, the Medu Nature. That's what the Greeks call hieroglyphs. But the Medu Bookstore, located in the Greenbrier Mall, has a new location. Check it out. Give Sister Mama Nia. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Black Dot Bookstore and Cultural Center. The Cultural Center and Bookstore located in Lithonia. They have their coffee bar, serving delicious African coffees and teas and so forth, pastries. That's the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore located in Lithonia. My good brother, Gazimde Ajamu, give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio at 9 p.m. 9 p.m. from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. Us Lifting Us every Thursday night from 9 to 10. Or you can call to listen or call to ask questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. For more information, call our sister, Shelly Amonsette, at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop, in located in Forest Park, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Sanjay Dash Haiti, my good sister, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, who has been doing great things on the island of Haiti, in the northeast portion of the island, doing great things with our children, the school, the health care, the sustainable agriculture, the entrepreneurship. It's outstanding, deserves to be supported. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay dash Haiti. Akaban Institute. Baba Barudi. Baba Barudi, I'm announcing a few times today and, of course, on Friday. Next week, Friday. Next week, Friday, Baba Barudi will be my guest. I'm excited about that. Of course, always excited about the possibilities of having Baba Barudi on. That is going to be on the 9th, April 9th. Baba Barudi will be my guest on April 9th. But check out Akaban Institute if you are supporting or love to support Akaban Institute. You can go to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But, of course, you can use Cash App or PayPal. In the Cash App, put the dollar sign, YAYAA, the letter MBARUTI, Barudi. All right. Also, too, he's a prolific writer, and we'll talk about those things on next week, Friday. You can go to AkabinHouse.com. AkabinHouse.com. Yeah. A lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. The Inye Sasim of Daily.
revolutionary thought. March 30th, we remember promises. In seeing our children, we see our opportunity to fulfill a promise made. Warriors never forget who they are, on whose shoulders they stand, and why they stand there with such balance, dignity, beauty, and vision. Warriors never forget that those coming after them need them to be our warrior ancestors now more than ever. Ever willful compromise undermines the warrior's fortitude. Remembrance strengthens them in ways that forgetting never can. Powerfully thinking people have always returned to their source in defining themselves. And they do this because they know that the trial and error of their ancestors found the way that was correct for them and will always be the most suitable for us. Moreover, politically conscious thinkers never lose sight of their original reality, their proven enemies, and their future. They never lose sight of home, never leave their ancestors or way behind on the road to fulfill empowerment. When they finally leave this plane, their only question is of whether they have produced more warriors in pursuit of this idea than were here when they arrived. Producing more of us than when we came in. Increasing the number. Increasing the level of consciousness and commitment to independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Affirm, I remember our promises and seek every opportunity to fulfill it. I remember our promises and seek every opportunity to fulfill it. March 31st. Ours has been a tradition of resistance so secret that even we have been unaware of it. The black man appearing so dumb that he couldn't understand a simple job the white boss explained to him. The black man always breaking his hoe, broom, shovel, and claiming surprise that he had did it, that he'd done it. The black man shuffling, murdering the time away. The black man speaking English upside down to keep them from understanding. To block communications that would further enslave him. The black man discovering boll weevils and transplanting them from cotton patch to cotton patch. The black man blowing snot in white folks' tapioca and pissing in the tea and coffee and stirring spit into the roast beef and chicken gravy. Black hands hard on tiny white hands, quick on little white bottoms. John Williams. It's good when we have reached the point where nothing Yorugu says or does disturbs our inner peace because we know their intrusive, disruptive nature. We know that they are compelled to efficiently deceive the weak among those they have worked so diligently to destroy so they can be elevated out of the caves. In order to become the norm, they will inject their insanity into everyone until every tortured soul possible loses his or her mind and desires nothing greater than to become one of them. It's good when we know the truth of liars. It's good when our conceptualization of the eternal enemy is thoroughly historically grounded. It's good when we have no question about our divine right to be righteously enraged. It's good when we can recognize a sadistic evil at the cultural seely level and permanently remove it from our lives. It's good when our vision embraces a full, unqualified empowerment and sovereignty for African people. Ashe. Affirm, my resistance is creatively applied. Affirm, my resistance is creatively applied. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah, I tell you. Okay. This was said in 1835, February 2nd, by Lord Macaulay's address to the British Parliament. I have traveled across the length and breadth of Africa, and I have not seen one person. I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in these countries, such high moral values, people of good, such character, that I do not think we will be ever able to conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is their spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient educational system, her culture. For if the Africans think that all that is foreign and English is good and greater than their own, then they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them to be, a truly dominated nation. Yeah. Yeah. Truly dominated nation. You know, I tell you. Africa. I love Africa. And I love Africans. I sometimes don't like what we do, but I love us. You know it. Kwame Nkrumah, after establishing Ghana in 1957, the first ones to break from European colonial. In fact, today on the news, they talked about the Commonwealth and what is the Commonwealth. And all these countries that are still tied, and some countries that still have the Caucasian woman, the queen, has the top person. I know Barbados is talking about getting rid of her. Jamaica should have been done, did that, and any and everywhere else. When they talk about, oh, the royal family is not. No, the royal family is the epitome of racism, of evil. I hate the royal. I hate this. But Kwame Nkrumah, he said this in 1961, the speech of freedom. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will engage not just as another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, no, but has a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is not built on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. He wanted to be the beacon, be the hope. But because of neocolonialism, despots, dictators, puppets, European interventions. He said this some years later. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. Oh, sadly, oh, so true. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effects that the Europeans have had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so that to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered view because why? We are Africans. And because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocide. You and I both know it. Y'all know it. Y'all know it's genocide. But, you know, you keep on you keep on doing what you're doing. Today, what's ever on your mind? Open mic Wednesday. A few things that are out there we're going to talk about. Or whatever it is that you want to talk about. Let me see if I can pick up a couple of things here. Yeah, once again, brothers and sisters, go to bbatumi.com and check out Brother Obadale's presentation this Saturday, The Forces Arrayed Against Africa, Social and Cultural Warfare. You know, this is serious. It really is. So that's at 9 a.m. on Saturday, 9 a.m. So, but you got to go to bbatumi.com and you can, you know, so you can get the information for Saturday. So you can not have to worry about nothing else. Do it now. Okay. Yeah. You know, the Final Four is set in men's and women's basketball. You know, once again, I want you to always try, at least for those who listen, and spread the word about what March Madness is. March Madness is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the labor of unpaid African people. There's going to be a Supreme Court hearing. The Supreme Court will hear a case this morning that could change the landscape of NCAA. The Ninth Circuit Court last year sided with former West Virginia running back Sean Alston in his antitrust case against the NCAA, ruling that the schools can provide unlimited academic-related expenses to their athletes. If the Supreme Court upholds that decision, it could open the door to a pay-for-play system in which schools compete for talent by shelling out thousands under the legal guise of education benefits. Student athletes' compensation has been at the top of their mind for years. I know it's been on mine. If you ever listened to any of my programs over the years since I've been doing this, and even before I did this, even when I was at the firehouse, I mean, I'm adamant. I can't stand the NCAA, and I hate its current president, Emmerich, to punch him in the face. Damn, Oshie. Student athletes' compensation has been at the top of the mind for years, but the glacier pace at which that progress continues to frustrate everyone. And well, for me, I don't like the image and likeness. I think that's bogus, and that's only a few. In fact, when they had a piece on Facebook the other day, only a small amount of people could take advantage of that with any certainty and with any promise of decent, I mean, hundreds of thousands. Most of them were in like anywhere between 20 and 30, 40,000. I don't understand. That's not bad money, you know, for a college student. But it's not what the NCAA is doing. Ahead of the tournament, some athletes took to social media to protest their inequities with the hashtag not NCAA property. I love it. Not NCAA. Because what these young people have done over these many years, they seem like they are the property of the NCAA. Because, and if you see it when you watch the NCAA, you see it right at half court. They emphasize student athletes. They're students who just happen to be very good athletically, and everybody around the country, around the world, wants to see them and are willing to pay a lot of money to do it. Television is willing to pay millions, hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion in television contracts and so forth, and coaches who, if their university is a public
University. That coach, if he has that kind of program, whether it be football or basketball, those are two of the main ones. He is making millions, but he has other revenue streams. That's right. He has other, aside from the 4, 5, 10, 12, whatever amount of millions he gets from the state. And of course, there are some coaches who are in private universities who are making as much, no doubt, depending upon the program. But he also has television contract, radio programs. He does commercials. The apparel that the young people have to wear, they have to wear because that coach is getting paid for them to wear it. The students, the players can't choose to wear anything other than what is dictated to them by the contract of Nike, Adidas, whoever, Under Armour, whatever. Not NCAA property. I love it. Meanwhile, right across the street from the Supreme Court, congressional lawmakers continue to discuss the federal name, image, and likeness legislation. Name, image, and likeness. The big picture, in theory, the NCAA isn't finding ways to secure compensation for its athletes as long as there are proper guardrails in place to ensure it to maintain the aura of amateurism. They want to continue to. In fact, even a couple of people on the radio program, excuse me, on the television program was like, kind of hesitant. But yeah, I like them to be. Damn it, they're not students. A lot of them don't go to school. They practice. They build their bodies up so they can play on Saturdays. They practice and build their bodies up so they can play. Take that rigorous schedule that they have. And then when their eligibility is up, unless they are, of course, so good that they leave, they're one and done. Even that's what a charade that is. I'm telling you, this is crazy. I don't think any decision the Supreme Court will make will be the silver bullet that, you know, resolves every major issue in college sports. This is being said by Len Elmore. Len Elmore was a former Maryland player, and he played in the NBA, and he is the current co-chair of the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. Anything that makes the college athlete experience a priority and works towards enhancing their education, health, safety, and well-being is something we have to be in favor of. Okay, Lynn, I agree with that, but I'm just saying. No, you should find ways that these people, that these men and women in the Power Five in big conferences that make money, if they don't make money, it don't make sense, then we find a way to deal with that. But for the ones that make money, the NCAA basketball, the NCAA football, the Power Five conferences, Big Ten, Pac-10, Big 12, the SEE, all of these companies, the ACC, they make money. And the young men risk their lives, their health, under the idea and disguise of, I got a scholarship. I got room and board. When many of them don't graduate. Yes, I understand they can take advantage of a good situation for them where they can make, where they can graduate. I threw those numbers out last week. Fact that a lot of them don't. I'm quite sure it's better than what it was. I remember one time it was really bad in terms of us being in school, not graduating. In fact,
that was part of that one piece where on Last Week Tonight, when that came on about a few years ago. I didn't like the piece because he talked about the young man had to take some courses. One of them was a Swahili course. Yeah, he should take a damn Swahili course. He should take a course that helps us communicate outside of them. Yeah. But the bottom line is that what they do and how they do it is criminal. And everybody makes money but them. I've said that those young men should get a stipend. They should get some money that be put away for them. Yes, they live on campus. Yes, they'll eat and so forth. They'll do their workouts. They'll play their games. And when their playing time is up or when they decide it is up, they can access the education that should be promised to them because of what they have done for the university, the amount of money that they have provided for the university. They'll get a advanced degree if they want it, education, at least a master's if they want it, education, a bachelor's for sure if they want it. It is there. And they would have enough money if they made professionals and they sign a big contract. That's one thing. A lot of them don't, is the real point. Is the point. In fact, you know, I've said this before about John Calipari, who, you know, I don't like these cats. I don't. But I had to give John Calipari some prop because he told me, he said, listen, ma'am, because a lot of times they deal with a woman because sometimes that star athlete's father is not in the picture. But let's just say that they are. So, you know, say, listen, sir, I could, you know, blow smoke up your ass and talk about how great your son is and going to our school and the educational process that we have here. And just, but listen, what I'm going to do is help your son get drafted by the NBA. Because if your son gets drafted, he'll get paid. If he doesn't get drafted, this is the NBA. And this also applies to the NFL. Then he'll have to go the free agent route. He'll have to try to seek ways to get into camps to show what he can do. You know, he had to show the combine, which is, somebody says, like slavery. You know, they check everything. They check your muscles, and how high you can jump, how fast you can run, all of these things. In fact, they had something on TV a few years ago when they were going to do a, what is that? Well, they had a draft. See, I can't think. I'm drawing a blank here on when they, each week they have. Anyway, they were pushing these men out there just like if it was enslavement. Talking about his size, his this, that, and the other. They were building fantasy teams. Oh, damn, Oshi. They were building their fantasy teams. And so they had this draft. And they were talking about their site. Oh, man, just ridiculous. Yeah. Another issue in athletics, of course, is gender identity. You know, if a man wants to be a woman, but he is still, even though he may have done a number of things. He may have breast. He may have anatomically corrected everything so he doesn't have a penis. He has a vagina. But technically, muscularly, he's still a man. So if he, it's just like when, what's her name? One of the first ones you heard about back in the 60s. Susan Richards, was it? And it was Richards, and she played tennis. She didn't dominate. She won a few times. But the thinking was, is that because she was a man, she would probably have more strength than average women, which seems somewhat logical. And therefore, in sprints, she would win, and therefore, in other activities, she might win. And so many of the women felt that's wrong. I'm a real woman. I was born this way. And now I got to compete with somebody who changed their physiology. And I want to compete. No, that's not fair. And I agree. I think that men and women who are transgender should compete in separate. There should be some transgender games. Compete against each other. Over 50 bills in 28 states have been introduced this year that would exclude transgender youth from playing sports on teams that align with their gender identity. In the past 3 weeks alone, Republicans, of course, Republicans from Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas have signed such bills. Yeah, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas. This legislation largely follows the same pattern. Lawmakers argue their intent is to ensure fairness in women's sports, which they believe will be overrun with dominant transgender athletes if left unregulated. Not only is there little, if any, scientific evidence backing that claim, but several of the states with pending legislation also hope to disallow transgender boys from competing. Hoped to disallow transgender boys from competing in women's sports, and indicating it may be less about fairness than outright exclusion. And everyone, you want to transgender boys to compete in boys' sports. We're not out here to take people's scholarships and stuff. A 15-year-old trans boy from North Dakota told SI. No, we just want to compete. I understand that. And if you want to compete, y'all should compete with each other. If there's enough of y'all in various events, compete against each other. You know? I don't know. Bills targeting transgender athletes are part of the larger culture war that has picked up steam since Biden has taken office. Arkansas just became the first state to pass a bill prohibiting doctors from performing gender-affirming care to trans youth. And over 20 other states have introduced similar bills. Now, that's, I ain't with that. You know, I sure ain't with that. You know. Yeah. So. Okay. On the Democratic side, this is not an issue that really excites the base. Dan Cox, the director of American Enterprise Institute, a survey center on American life. But on the right, I think these issues are really, really salient. So it tends to fire up folks disproportionately on the right than, of course, on the left. Because the people on the left are more apt to be more liberal in their thinking. Yeah. Okay. This is a open mic Wednesday. What's on your mind? So I got a caller here. Let me see this caller. 404. Good afternoon. 404, I guess, just wants to listen, and that's cool. But if you want to engage in some conversation, hit star twice. Hit star twice. Sports participation has been linked to higher self-esteem and better grades amongst everybody, not just the LGBTQ and all the other alphabets, 80% of whom say recent politics have negatively impacted their well-being. And, of course, the Trevor Project's 2020 Mental Health Survey. And they have that. They relate that. You know. So athletes, you know, and Oh, there's another thing here. High school athletics. The first shot clock game was today in 1986, I apologize, the first shot clock game. And that was Louisville against Duke. And they beat Duke by 3. Remember that very well. Never nervous Purvis. Purvis Ellison. Never nervous. And then Purvis, of course, was outstanding in that game. You know. Yeah. Never nervous Purvis. But he had straddled with injuries in the NBA, never fulfilled his promise in the NBA at all. So he caught this moniker, Out of Service Purvis. His nickname was Out of Service Purvis because he just never could get it together in the NBA. You know, had good skill. He was smooth, you know. It was smooth. And the clock, the shot clock, first it started out at 45 seconds. You know, the women had a shot clock since 71, you know. And, of course, the NBA's 24-second clock since 1954, a few years after I was born. And it started out at 45 and then went to 35. And, of course, now today it's a 30-second shot clock. And I'm in favor of a shot. In fact, some states have high school games that are with a shot clock, 30-second shot clock. I don't think it's here in Georgia. I'm not sure. I don't think it's. I believe Florida's one. I don't think it's here. They have a shot clock. Yeah. So, and of course, baseball is about to start. I don't know if any of you folks are baseball fans. I'm not a baseball fan. For me, I fell in love with the Mets at the same time. Once again, 1969, the Mets, the Jets, and the Lakers, my three teams. What happened was, the Mets were in a struggle with the Chicago Cubs for the pennant to see who would play Atlanta. This is the first time they had two divisions in the American League and in the National League. It used to be whoever was a top team in the American League and the top team in the National League and never played each other until the World Series, they played the World Series. They didn't have what you see today. Where it was the top team in each one, they didn't have no playoff system. And so in 69, that was the first year that Atlanta was the West and the Mets had beaten out the Cubs, took over, and the Cubs had a big lead too. And they played the Mets in Atlanta. And over on the American side, it was Minnesota and Baltimore, and Baltimore was dominating. The Baltimore Orioles were dominating. Their pitching staff and players and Boog Powell and those cats, Paul Blair, you know, Frank Robinson, you know. Anyway, they beat Minnesota. So now the World Series is set between Baltimore and the Mets. And the Mets beat them. The Mets had some good pitching they had. In fact, Nolan Ryan, the fireball from Texas, was on the Mets staff. He wasn't a starter. He was a relief pitcher. Then, of course, he became a starter, and he started pitching no-hitters and so forth with Houston and later with Texas. Nolan Ryan. But the Mets had Tom Seaver, Jerry Kuzman, a few others, Tug McGraw. And, of course, that team they put out there. Don Clendenin was the MVP because he hit a few home runs. But I think I mentioned this before, I'll mention it again. There's a movie called Frequency about the Aurora Borealis coming down into New York area and about a guy who was a firefighter who was a ham radio operator. And what happened was his son, who didn't become a firefighter. His son became a police officer. And he would bring out the ham radio every now and then and just to reminisce about his dad. Because Aurora Borealis was down, there was a frequency transmission from the past to the future. Good movie. Check it out. So that's all I'm going to say to you on that tip, because I'm going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to take some callers. I got more information. It's just a, you know, and then because Friday, if you want to be involved in the conversation, I hope that you do. You know, I'm just going to say it like it is. You know, there was no Exodus. There was no Moses. There was none of that. It's not true. And yet, we persist. We're going to talk about that. And then next week, Friday, Baba Baruti will be my guest. Next week, Friday, on the 9th. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. You know that, and hope that you are too. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
My name is commercial happiness.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Larry Graham, Graham Central Station, the jam. Love it. Another one of those 70s cuts. I tell you. African Perspectives, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan from 7 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. All right. Back at you. Of course, give us a call at 215-490-9832. And you can have conversation. Today is the birth date of Jack Johnson. That's right, today. He was born March 31st, 1878. He died June 10th, 1946 in an automobile accident. Yeah. He had just been dissed and he was mad about it. Got in his car and lost control and hit a pole. And, you know, had to take him to the color hospital, 25 damn miles away. Probably passed up two or three hospitals on the way. Yeah. You have Jack Johnson, the Galveston giant. Galveston, Texas, he was born. And, you know, became a boxer and became very skilled. Became very skilled. And he won the chance at the heavyweight championship. Jim Jeffries had retired. You can check out what I'm talking about. Even on YouTube, you can go to YouTube and put in Unforgivable Blackness. This is a documentary by Ken Burns. You know, Ken Burns is the PBS documentarian. And but this, I mean, a lot of Ken Burns stuff is good. I'm just saying. And this one is outstanding. Unforgivable Blackness. Because one of the things, you know, and I remember seeing James Earl Jones, you know, Great White Hope. You can check that out too. I'm not sure if you can get it on YouTube, but I know you can probably check that out on some of these streaming services. You know. And he, James Earl Jones, played Jack Johnson. And of course, Jack Johnson, you know, aside from whooping Cracker's ass, was also taking his women. So them white folks was pissed. Because the heavyweight champion is a symbol. See, boxing, horse racing, and betting. Horse racing and baseball. Betting is always going to be the pastime. But boxing, horse racing, and baseball were the three main sports at the turn of the last century in the 19th century. And even in the 20th century, in the 1900s, football didn't become very big on a college level and pro level until the 40s and 50s, and of course, in the 60s for professional. It turned in the 60s. The 60s were be considered, I don't even want to call it the golden age. I don't believe in that. But in the 60s, you had, and not only that, because you had a number of American African players who had spiced up, so to speak, professional football. But boxing, horse racing, in fact, the first jockeys were us. That turned in the early 1900s. No more. There hasn't been a African or American African jockey that I can ever remember. There's many other nationalities because, of course, you got to be a small person. And that, you know, on that horse's back, you can't be having no weight. That horse got to glide through there, you know, run as fast as it can. But those were the sports that were big at the time. And, of course, boxing, the main ruler was the heavyweight champion. John L. Sullivan, the bare-knuckle fighter, was the first recognized heavyweight champion in the world. So the heavyweight champion must be Caucasian. Well, Jim Jeffries had retired, and Jack Johnson wanted to fight him. Ken Burns got the title, Irishman Ken Burns. And Jack Johnson kept pressuring him to give him a title shot until finally he agreed to do so in Melbourne, Australia. They built a stadium out there, 20,000 people in Melbourne, Australia, you know. And he really beat Ken Burns' ass bad, but kind of carried him, you know. And he became the heavyweight champion of the world. Well, of course, the United States claims that they run the world. Really, Britain runs the world, as Brother Paul has explained to us. You know, America's just a military arm. America's just a bully. The real folks who run the world are Europeans. And so they said, we need a white hope. We need the great white hope. They need somebody to come and, you know, take the title back where it rightfully belongs. And so they pressured Jeffries to come out of retirement. They pressured him to come out of retirement. The fight was held in Reno, Nevada. And in fact, because Jeffries, and he, Johnson was, while Jeffries was president, was, you know, Jeffries was president. While Jeffries was champion, heavyweight champion, he told him, he said, hey, let's fight, you know. He fought Bob Fitzsimmons and knocked him out in two rounds. He was a former champion and so forth. But Jim Jeffries said, no, I refused. Ain't gonna fight no, you know, and retired. But Johnson in 1908. Now, this is after Joe Gaines. Joe Gaines became the first American African boxing champion. So Johnson's victory was after that, and he fought Tommy Burns in Sydney, Australia, not Melbourne. Sydney, Australia. After following Burns for a few years and taunting him, they finally relented and gave him. The guarantee, though, was that Burns get $30,000. You know. And $30,000 then in 1908. Might be about more of $1 million today. After Johnson's victory, racial animosity. I'm going to tell you, let me say this about Jack Johnson's victories. In essence, they were really bad. Because what happened, these Caucasians would go out into the community all pissed that this Negro, this colored, had won the fight, beating our great white hope. That they would go out. I can't see how many. I know the fight that he had with Jeffries. Many riots broke out. Not so much the Ken Burns fight over in Sydney, Australia, but when Jeffries came out of retirement, and even though they say he was well over 100 pounds, you know, but he said, "I have to prove that the white man is better than the Negro. I have to prove the white man is better than the Negro, so I'm going to get in shape." And also, too, that Jeffries was guaranteed $120 million. Offered him $120 million to come out of retirement to fight and to take the championship back from that Negro. But even John L. Sullivan, the first heavyweight champ, had some things to say about it. If you want to join this conversation or change the conversation, please do so. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I just found out earlier today it was Jack Johnson's, today is his birthday. And I had a lot of admiration for Jack Johnson, but the problem, of course, Jack Johnson loved white women. That was one of his downfalls. You dug white women. And, of course, white men couldn't stand his ass for dealing with white women. And, of course, they came up with a law, the Mann Act. And they put him in prison. They tried to put him in prison for the Mann Act, taking a female across state lines for immoral acts. Now, they initiated and passed that long after Jack Johnson had done what he had done. You see. But John L. Sullivan said that Jack Johnson was a better fighter, had good techniques and so forth. Like I said, John L. Sullivan was the first heavyweight champions in bare knuckle fighting. But of course, this time they had gloves, you know. Yeah. And he got his butt wrist. But the tensions, in fact, tensions were brewing in the lead up to the fight, in order to prevent any harm from coming to either fighter. Guns were prohibited within the arena, along with sales of alcohol, and anyone who was under the effects of alcohol had to leave. Apples were also banned, and throwing fruit and so forth, as well as any weapon whatsoever behind the racial attitudes which were being instigated by the media. That's right, the media was the major investment in gambling for the fight, with 10-1 odds in favor of Jeffries. The fight took place on July 4th. Oh, you can't get any better than that. That's their Independence Day, July 4th. We will surely win on July 4th. We will beat that Negro. In front of 20,000 people at a ring which was built just for the occasion in downtown Reno, Nevada, Jeffries proved unable to impose his will on the younger champion, and Johnson dominated the fight. By the 15th round, after Jeffries had been knocked down twice for the first time in his career, Jeffries cornered, they threw in the towel to end the fight and prevent Jeffries from having been knocked out. They didn't want to see that happen. They threw in the towel. I knew what that look meant. The old ship was sinking. Afterwards, Jeffries, humbled by the loss, what he had seen of Johnson in their match. I could have never have whipped Johnson even at my best. I could never have whipped Johnson even at my best. I couldn't hit him. No, I couldn't have reached him in, you know, 1,000 years. This is the admitting of the great white hope. Fight of the century earned Johnson, $65 million, which would be about almost $2 million in today's money, and silenced the critics who had belittled Johnson's previous victory over Tommy Burns as empty, claiming that Burns was a false champion since Jeffries had retired undefeated. But John L. Sullivan had something else to say about it. But once again, the outcome of the fight triggered riots. You know, one thing to me, a riot, you come, you know, they, what, what that was the imposition on our communities. Caucasians mad as hell, just like what you've seen happen on January 6th. They mad as hell and they're going to storm something. The victory was what it is, but because they couldn't stand it, they want to vamp on our communities. I can't imagine how many countless young people were killed who were just out in these demented ass, just to see them out and just knowing that Jack Johnson, who also had a white woman, this Negro is going to pay, this nigger is going to pay. Kidnap him, torture him, kill him, string him up, skin him, whatever. And it happened a lot during his victories. That's why really, even if he didn't flaunt white women, it still would have been something, because understand something. After Jack Johnson, there was never a heavyweight champion until Joe Louis. Until Joe Louis. And it was understood that Joe Louis had to behave in a certain way. He had to have a black woman by his side. It was understood. All that changed, of course, with Muhammad Ali. You couldn't control Muhammad Ali. All them other cats, all those other Negroes. And I shouldn't say that. But the bottom line was, they understood that in order for me to do this, I have to go along with this. But that was not Muhammad Ali. Riots erupted in New York, Pennsylvania, Philly, New Orleans, Atlanta, St. Louis, Little Rock, Arkansas, Houston, and all over. In all, riots occurred in more than 25 states and 50 cities. At least 20 people were killed, supposedly. I'm quite sure a lot more, and hundreds were injured. And you can't count the many people who were lynched. Because this black man had the audacity, the unforgivable blackness, to be heavyweight champ of the world. Yeah. Well, some years later, as he was, they didn't want to show it on film. They had banned it showing on film. They didn't want it because they had a film of it. They didn't want to show it on film.
Yeah.
You know? Because the embarrassment that these people had, at least their feeling was, the embarrassment that they had experienced. You know? The fight film received more public attention in the United States than any other film to date. For the next 5 years, until, that's right, Birth of a Nation, the heroic movie of the Klan, the Birth of a Nation. Yep, the film was viewed in the White House by Woodrow Wilson. They had a screening in the White House, and Woodrow Wilson said, "It's history written in lightning." So, well, then Johnson now faces Jess Willard. Jess Willard, who was a farmer and a big man, too, another big man. On April 5th, 1915, Johnson lost his title to Jess Willard, a working cowboy from Kansas who started boxing when he was 27 years old with a crowd of 25,000. In Havana, Cuba. A crowd of 25,000 in Havana, Cuba. Johnson was knocked out in the 26th round of a scheduled 45. You fight to the depth. The 26th round, you know, the 15 round fights became the norm, you know. And then they said, man, that's a lot of battering, especially in those later rounds. Cats be taking a lot of tough hits because they're hard, you know, they're worn out, they've been getting battered and bruised and so forth. We're going to cut it to 12. About 20 years ago, they cut it to 12. I know that Muhammad Ali, all the way up in the 70s, so I would say by in the 80s. They might have cut it to 12 in the 80s. 12-round fight. Because I believe that the Sugar Ray fights were 15-rounders, him and Tommy Hearns. 15-rounders. And so they cut it to 12 because of the effects of the beatings that these guys took. But Johnson, in fact, it is said by many a year after the fight to have spread rumors that he took a dive that Johnson took. But Willard is widely regarded as having won the fight outright. Many people thought Johnson purposely threw the fight because Willard was Caucasian. In an effort to have his man act, a man act, which I later talked about earlier, of him taking women across state lines for immoral acts. Willard ironically responded, if he was going to throw the fight, I wish he had done it sooner. It was hot as hell out there. It's Havana, Cuba, man. And it's April. It doesn't make any difference. They're close to the equator. So, so yeah. Jess Willard became the champion. And he got the championship back. You know, he was just a dynamic man. He was a dynamic man. But, of course, he had to thank for the white women. And he married one of them. I think he married two of them, you know. But he was, you know, also, too, he made some improvements to the monkey wrench. Some argue that he created it and gave it the name. The Caucasians gave it the name in expression of him. That is not true. The wrench was created before him, but he made improvements on it. And he is credited with that. He is credited with not the invention of it, but the improvement of it. You know. Yeah. And so, you know, he was denied service at some club in where was that at that he died? In North Carolina. Franklinton, North Carolina. In the South. And like I said, they passed many hospitals before they could find a colored hospital. And so the Mann Act, which he was, he didn't go to prison. He skipped town. He went and then he struck a deal to get back. And you'll check that out in the documentary, Unforgivable Blackness. He didn't go to prison. But all that's been on his record. And of course, you know, he's buried in Graceland Cemetery in Chicago, next to one of his Caucasian wives, I believe. But what was interesting is that there were so many petitions to have him pardoned during Barack. I tell you, that's, man, Barack Obama just becomes even more and more of a damn disappointment. But when you know the history, when you know what's happening, then it's not a disappointment. It is to be expected, because as I state, no matter who is the president of the United States, no matter who that individual is, they could be male or female, they can be a African or European or Chinese, Japanese, whatever that person is, their main purpose is to help sustain and maintain Caucasian privilege that has been established by this country. But I felt, you know, there's a number of things that I thought, I said that, man, Barack Obama coming in should do Kwanzaa. I thought they at least do a Kwanzaa. He didn't touch it. Didn't go damn nowhere near it. I thought maybe he'd do some pardoning. Pardon Marcus Garvey, who still hasn't been pardoned, needs to be pardoned. Donald damn Trump, pardon Jack Johnson. Donald Trump, damn it. I'm glad he got pardoned. We should have been what it is, but it is what it is. Donald Trump pardoned him on May 24th, 2018. by Donald damn Trump. But if you get a chance to go on to YouTube and put that in. Go on YouTube and put that information in and check that out. It's a good piece. It really is. It's a good piece. The Unforgivable Blackness. It's a good documentary. It's long. It's about, I think, 3.5 hours over a few days. So, you know, yeah. Yeah, Donald Trump, pardon me. I was pissed. And you know, funny, how he ain't trying to be funny, but how funny Trump is. Just like he said, yeah, Frederick Douglass, she's still doing good work. I was surprised. Oh, Jack Johnson, I think I saw him at the casino. So, we're going to take a break right quick. When we come back from the break, we'll have more conversation. You want to join this conversation, please? Dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We got our caller, 646-646. Good afternoon.
Odios, what's happening, baby?
How you doing, Jay? What's happening with you, man?
Same old, same old.
I hear you.
You know, the white man's still the devil. Negroes are still sick. And the Baba Louie is the Baba Louie, and everybody else. Yeah. It's just trying to dominate us. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
Jack Johnson, real interesting character, one would say. I deemed him to be an extremely selfish Negro based on his relationship alone with that white trash. You know, I never understand a man who would jeopardize his freedom and everything to cavort with white trash. But, you know, everybody has their fetish. Yeah. And I guess that cracker was his fetish.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's interesting. But you know, Jay, you look at it, and I don't know if you – have you ever seen that documentary, Unforgivable Blackness?
Yeah, I saw a part of it. I didn't see
because
it is old, but
yeah.
I know the story.
Yeah, it is old. But, you know, the mindset, I'm dominating the cracker. I'm dominating every facet of his life. I'm kicking his ass, and I'm doing his woman, you know.
Yep.
And one would think that they would have killed him. You know, just like they said at the one fight.
Because they're cowards.
Yeah, because, you know.
The message is not to kill him, because if they kill him, then they won't have the symbolic figure to use for their psychopathic sickness.
Yeah, because, I mean.
They wouldn't kill him. They would allow him to flourish.
Right.
So that in their mind, they could justify them killing us.
Yeah.
The cracker is a devious piece of work, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, his psychology of his behavior is a mofo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, they're psychopaths. You know, that's why I love Dr. Bobby Wright, man.
The cracker need to be studied.
Yeah, well.
The cracker need to be studied on a real serious level.
But, hey, we've already done it. Dr. Marima Ani's book is outstanding. Urugu.
Oh, yeah.
An African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. We've done it. Dr. Bobby Wright, he's told us these people are psychopaths.
Yeah, but the Negro, for some reason, don't understand the psychopathic nature of this cracker. Because if he would, he would really stay the F away from him.
Yeah, but see.
On the manner in which they do.
But
now,
see.
Check this out.
But hold on, Jay. Just hold that thought. Because it's like this. They dominate. They dominate the narrative. And so what you get as a Negro is love for the cracker. That's what you get. You see? You get from Dr. Bobby Wright and all the other African-centered scholars, Dr. John Henry, you get the opposite of that. But the reality is you're going to get from this society, you know, something that you should not do, and that is challenge Caucasians. Something you should not do that something you better do is stay in your place. And know where your place is.
It's always about the narrative. That's the reality. The reality is the narrative in which the white man put forward to you that unfortunately your dumbass usually accepts. I mean, this whole thing with the vaccination, I was looking online and I was seeing where the NBA is upset and concerned about some of the players are not taking the vaccination. I mean, thank God some of these Negroes got enough effing sense to know not to take no damn chimpanzee waste or abortion, fecal matter, or all the other type of sugar, honey, iced tea that's in this vaccination. You got to be literally non-informant, not having the ability to do the necessary research, and most of all, being trusting of a goddamn white man. That just show how retarded your black ass is. If you even do it. You know, I'm like this. There's only two people in the world that I trust enough. If they said to me, they go take the vaccination, then I'll take it. There's only two people. And one of them going to be on your show next week.
Bubba Baroody?
Yeah. If Bubba Baroody said, I'm taking the vaccination, then I would probably take it. And my brother Kitty, who done the research.
Who that?
You
Kitty?
Know what
Kitty?
I mean? Anybody that the white man is coming out against in regards to this vaccination, that's the people that I would trust. Yeah. Other than that, I wouldn't F with it on no level. You know, this is the real deal, O. And I think sometimes our people don't understand that. Understand this. The Creator has the date and the stamp when you're going to come and when you're going to leave. Now, the circumstances of this, is it going to be a pleasant death or a painful death? That's the way I look at life. When my time is to check out, I'm just going to check out.
Yeah.
That's why I don't fight it no more. That's why I'm accepting it. Do I want to leave? Nah, I like to stick around a little longer. But the reality is, if the Creator says that it's time that you got to leave this earth, you just got to leave. Because if that wasn't the case, nobody would leave. Nobody would want to die. Everybody would want to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But unfortunately, we don't look at it. We don't look at it that way. So whereby now, 10 years from now, it may come that this vaccination, along with the boosters that they're going to make you take yearly, is taking years and years off of your life. And the reality is, it's allowing crackers to flourish and repopulate and diminish the population or whatever direction they want to go. I mean, what if some sinister thing was that they could press a button after you take the vaccination and your monkey ass die? That ain't something that's not.
It's not far from comprehension, right? And that's the point. It's not far from comprehension because they have been doing some sinister things since their arrival on the planet or their human development on the planet. They have been doing some dastardly evil things, and so I would put nothing past them. That's why.
And
I know.
It's not like they can't do it. Oh,
yeah.
It's not like they can't. It's don't think about it. It's not like they don't have things in place where they could push a button and your black ass can die for what they put in the vaccination. I mean, think about all of the people they vaccinate.
Yeah,
think
globally.
About it. And the sinister nature of other white men. I need to do a damn movie about this.
When they talked about they need to decrease the population by a number of billions of people, because if left unchecked, then the population would continue to grow, except them. Europeans, as I state all the time, have been experiencing negative population growth. For every two that die, only one is born.
And wouldn't that be a beautiful thing to be able to do that? To be able to use that type of situation to, handle their business of eliminating, as one would say, niggas and all other form of degeneracy that they deem to be on society. Because listen, they got a record of you taking the vaccination, and all they have to do is just push the button, and you go, oh, come on, man. That's something the white man would do.
I put nothing past Europeans.
Nothing.
They will do whatever I feel they need to do to maintain their position of dominance and control. There's nothing. They kill themselves. They would kill themselves to maintain dominance and control. Okay?
A few of them would have
exactly.
To go.
Exactly.
Just think about it. If you have the audacity to create something using chimpanzee waste to give to humans, you got to be mighty effing evil. And the Negro don't even understand that.
Yeah. Well,
you got to be mighty effing evil to even think that you could use the chemical or the DNA or whatever properties of a chimpanzee to give to a human.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to be one twisted mofo.
Yeah.
And here it is, the Negro just going to go along with it because what?
Well, see, I think the problem. See, one of the real problems that we have, because we're under Western domination, which of course is artificial in its existence in any damn way, and of course every problem, there is not to them. There is not a natural solution. There's only a chemical solution. There's only a pharmaceutical solution. Right. You know, because that's money. Because with us, there's a natural solution. And it may not cost you a damn dime. All it costs you is doing the research or going into the garden or going into wooded areas or whatever it is to find the right plants, the right seeds, and so forth. And bam, there it is. You know, that's why they had to kill Dr. Sabi and anybody else like that. Because it's all about, this is capitalism. Capitalism is about making money, making sacrifices of those who they deem will cause them not to make money. They got to go.
I tell you, and I'll be very, very honest with you. This cracker is an amazing species, man. I mean, his actions and behavior on this planet is amazing. And you know, unfortunately, we as a people don't really think about it or put it into the context that we should, and to see him for who and what he is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we talk about the devil, but this cracker is really beyond the devil.
Right.
If you really think about it, he is fundamentally a effed up.
Yeah. That's why when Elijah Muhammad kept calling him a devil, not that in the mindset of many people that he has a tail, a pointed tail with horns. And
right.
No, his evil mindset, his deviousness, his willingness to supplant people, to take from people, to eliminate people. This is an evil mindset. That is a mindset of a devil. And that's what he's talking about. And that was then, and that is still that way today. And it'll be that way, damn it, tomorrow. Our problem is...
Was it his name? Yakub,
the bald-headed.
Yakub.
Yeah, no, that
Yerugal,
was...
Yerugal Yakub.
Yeah.
Yakub Yerugal.
Well, Yakub was the bald-headed scientist that grafted him, supposedly, in that story. Yerugal is an incomplete being that comes out of the Dogon mythology. But anyway,
that's what the white man is anyway.
Yeah.
An incomplete being, a savage, an animal.
Yeah.
A no good, filthy, stinking dirtbag.
To me, what he has done to humanity, humanity, but particularly to us, because other people in the human family still know who they are. They still trace their roots. They still trace their culture and so forth. They know who, but because he disrupted ours, he separated us. He gave us a retrobate mind, as they used to say. He gave us the idea that we were less than, we were subhuman. And he kept beating us down with it came to the point that we believed him. And then, because he was the model, we wanted then not to be who we were and not to be like us. We wanted to be like him. We wanted to be him.
Yeah.
You know, we processed our hair. We bleached our skin. Our women have gone through all kinds of changes and still doing it. I'm saying that at this moment in time in our history, we are still behaving and acting the way the European designed us to do, or encouraged us to do, or educated us to do. Or whatever words you want to use. It's still happening, you know?
Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think the Negro, this vanglorious, as they call him, Negro, is going to do if Shaman or whatever the hell the cracker name is get off with the murder of George Floyd? What do you think the Negro
gonna do? I don't know. I mean, you know, we demonstrate, we complain, we, you know, some of our newscasters start crying. The Don Lemon, Van Jones, and what's the sister's name?
Oh, that Van Jones. Yeah. I like The Witness.
Yeah.
Him and Bakari Sellers.
Oh, yeah, Bakari Sellers.
Like
oh,
to
man.
Take my belt off and whip their ass.
But they'll start crying and so forth. And, you know, we're better than this.
Them Negroes are sick.
You know, we're better than this. No, this is who you are.
No, we not.
You know?
America ain't better than this.
No, this is who America is.
Who told
and so,
you that?
And so, what would probably happen, although I don't see it in this particular case, I think that there have been so many. And now, of course, this trial is being televised nationwide, you know, and supposedly this trial is completely transparent and gavel-to-gavel coverage of it. And so the prosecution is laying out its case and doing a damn good job. And what the defense have tried to do is say that it's not that the fact he had his knee on not 8 minutes, 46 seconds, but 9 minutes and 29 seconds on his back and knee on his neck and just immobilized to the point. And then he went lifeless. And even as he was lifeless minutes more, he kept that. Even when people took, take his pulse, do this, do that. You know, you had a, Minneapolis firefighter, female, and she might have some expertise in first aid. Of course.
And all of it, to be honest with you, all truthfulness, that's the sick thing out of it, that the cracker, with him being dead, still kept his knee on his neck.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. I mean, that right there is the evilness out of all of it. And I tell you this. I hope that if he is convicted and he go to jail, somebody treat him in the same fashion.
Yeah, well,
I really hope.
Well, it depends upon where he goes, but I think that, you know, they'll try to, I believe, although they didn't do that in Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, Jeffrey Dahmer, and I don't know if you heard about this Caucasian named Jesse Anderson. Jesse Anderson killed his wife and blamed it on her brother. You know, he had an elaborate scheme that he was going to blame this on her brother. He had got a hat from her brother. So when they examined it, you know, they'll show that it was probably of some brother's hair and whatever. So he blamed it on her brother. In fact, when the stuff went down, the police brought in a whole bunch of people and got two of them to confess. You know? Just to save their ass, you know? But after some weeks later, his whole thing went, you know, just crumbled, and then he admitted. So he's in prison along with Jeffrey Dahmer. A brother who's been in prison for murder, Christopher Scarver. Since Wisconsin does not have the death penalty, the state still killed him anyway. The guards turned their heads. He had a broom handle or mop handle. You know, in prison, you know, those mop handles, they're pretty big. They ain't like the little ones you buy, you know, here for home use. This is industrial. So he took that. He killed Jeffrey Dahmer. He went down the hall and he killed Jesse Anderson.
Okay.
In one day, in one Beautiful. Situation. They got rid of two notorious Caucasians who had committed heinous acts and murder because Wisconsin does not have the death penalty. And I'm not sure what benefit Christopher Scarver got out of it. And maybe some, you know, I know he didn't get out of prison, but maybe he did later.
Black?
Huh?
He was black?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Christopher Scarver. Hey. Yeah, he was a brother. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. All right, Jay. Appreciate you, man.
Have a good one, ODO.
All right.
I look forward to Friday.
Oh, please do. I want you to help me out. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it, brother.
Oh, we should
yeah.
have some real fun on Friday.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you the Negro team will be upset with you afterwards. But as I say, Ethel.
Hey, it is what it is, brother. Let's speak truth.
Okay.
Let's speak our truth. Let's speak truth. All right.
Okay.
Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed day. Hope to see you on Friday. Peace, family.